Hello and welcome to Next 2.0 on WQLN NPR. I am your host, Marcus Atkinson. Next is produced by the Public's Voice Media. We're here today with our guest hosts, both Chuck Camerata and Mark Blunt. If you want to know more about Next 2.0, go to Facebook, like the page. You can also follow us on Instagram at Next 2.0 Erie. There you can keep up with upcoming show promos, events, and clips about what's next for our communities and our democracy. Thank you for tuning in. Happy New Year.
Yeah,
Happy New Year to you too.
Yes, yes. 2024 is officially here. I can't speak for the next person. I am so happy that 2023 is done. It ended on a bang in my personal life, and I don't mean a good bang. Seems like every issue that could have appeared between October and December of 2023. Like, what in the hell is going on? It feels like a great conspiracy, so I'm glad to be on the other side. But the bane of my existence for a lot of these shows is like the year in review, and I know the year needs to be reviewed and all of that good stuff. I want to spend time talking about, I know we've got some preparation for shows to come. We're thinking about what kind of shows we want to produce. I'll start this off, a couple of things. I spoke to somebody today, as a matter of fact. I stopped at a neighborhood center, and the lady says she listened to our show about Israel and Palestine, and she thought it was fascinating. We had a good 15-minute exchange, and she had some really great opinions. I almost wanted to invite her back for round two. And that was one of those subjects that we took on just because I wanted to have some sort of documented say about the topic. But it's ever-evolving, and at the same time, you don't want to take it on until you know as much as you possibly can. So with looking forward to 2024, I'll say the topic that I think is going to most affect the year, and it was actually born from a conversation we had, Chuck. The election cycle is, this is what's fascinating to me. Mark, I know you're a big history buff. You both are. But Mark brings it up a lot in conversation. It is always difficult to discern when you are in history, when you are living in a moment that will live on in infamy. And this is one of those moments politically, like Miles, my son is 10. He'll study this moment in college when he gets there. 100% guarantee in high school when he gets there. There's so much unprecedented history being made and not the best kinds. That is going to be the story for 2024. And where it goes, I have no idea. And I think that the other stories for 2024, in my opinion, are tied into election, border control and woman's right to choose and all of these different things that are finding itself into the political arena. On a national level, I think these are going to be some of the stories of the year.
Yeah. Stories of the decade, maybe stories of American history.
Well, it's interesting that you bring that up. But it's simply because you're saying Miles is going to be studying. The issue would be, what is he going to be studying? Hmm. Will January 6th be viewed as an insurrection? Because the election might come down to just this, people. Was that an insurrection or not? Hmm. By the Constitution standards, the Supreme Court is getting ready to rule if Trump led an insurrection. And so by the time Miles gets old enough to study this, we'll know an answer. However, the judges that are deciding this prior to this were strict constitutionalists. So I find this interesting. What are they going to rule? Because if it is an insurrection, he's technically disqualified. Hey, this is not Mark saying this. This is the Constitution saying it. Article 14, Section 3. It might be reversed, but it's in there. You can't run if you led an insurrection. So what was January 6th and how would that be taught?
Mm-hmm. At the very least, you have to say that he was complicit. And listen, we'll dissect this. But again, understanding that this is 2024 is going to come down to this topic. Everything else will pale in comparison. I don't give a damn who wins the Super Bowl. I don't, if Jordan comes out of retirement, it might get more news than this. But this is going to be the story, you know.
Yeah, and this is going to be the ongoing story. So it's not going to be one or two news cycles.
Oh, no.
We're going to be dealing with this for quite a while as a nation. So no matter what happens with that decision, and no matter what happens with the election in November, this has implications for long-term future of America.
Yeah.
And that's the part of it that I don't think people are thinking too hard about.
I don't. I think they're trivial. My personal opinion is I think they're trivializing what happened on the 6th. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, people have went to jail based off of their actions on the 6th.
Yeah.
So how can there be people in jail for something that some people say it wasn't?
Mm-hmm.
So if it wasn't an insurrection or insurgency or whatever you want
to
call it,
why are folks going to jail? One of the things one of the first stories that you will hear us break down on this topic is who was Jenny Thomas? Because there are a lot of people, rightfully so, that are saying Clarence Thomas has to recuse himself when this comes before the Supreme Court. You absolutely do, Clarence. His wife was at the January 6th event. She was corresponding with his chief of staff at that time, Mark Meadows, I want to say his name is, yeah. Mm-hmm. She was corresponding with him when he's sitting right next to Trump, so she indirectly was corresponding with the sitting president at that time. The pressure he was putting on Mike Pence was well documented, but back to Jenny Thomas, you can't tell me, I mean, however Clarence Thomas feels, in my opinion, was represented fully by the actions of his wife. So you can't sit there and rule on this matter. I don't know if he'll recuse himself or not, but I feel like he should.
He won't. And if you think about, can he have his own ideas and thoughts about this? Hell no, he can't. Because if I say, as a sitting judge of the Supreme Court, if I say that this was insurrection, I'm now saying that my wife committed a crime. Mm. How am I... So that's, I mean, Clarence Thomas is not going to, and that's why he won't recuse himself. He's not going to do that.
Yeah.
He don't have his own ideas on this.
No, he doesn't. And I know that, so that's one topic that's going to come out of this. This is going to grow so many tentacles. I mean, in the next, before we go on hiatus for the summer, I foresee at least 4 or 5 shows on this. Easy, because that unto itself is a show. The Supreme Court, them not wanting to hear this. Now, there have been times, and I'll quote some directly because I can't think off the top of my head, when Trump was in there and he wanted to fast track a couple of cases to be heard, they accepted it on multiple occasions. This time around, nah, we're going to let the process play out. It's hard to figure out how to interpret that. But I do know with Justice Roberts, he's concerned about their reputation as a bipartisan body because they don't have that right now. You know, you talk about how the Constitution's interpreted. I know that Amy Coney Barrett has hung her hat on how she, was she an originalist? Is that the?
Yeah. Yeah, the thing about originalism is, though, if we're being originalists, Amy, then you don't even get to be on the Supreme Court.
You don't
even get to vote in elections if we're being originalists. So, I mean, that just all falls apart when you start to really think about it seriously. It's all playing the game of who is going to win and who's going to control the future of our country. And I think this election will determine whether America continues to be America.
There it is. And that's another show that comes out of this, right? Because I was in a conversation, a really good conversation. And I said, I know that there's been a kind of a lack of tolerance, zero tolerance in the minds of a lot of people about things like kneeling during the national anthem and some of these protests, whether it's This Life Matter or That Life Matter, you know, Black Lives in particular. And through all of that, take it back to Rodney King. I was telling this person, I said, man, listen, the Rodney King trial left a bad taste. I mean, and that's a galactic understatement in the mouths of Black America. Fast forward to the OJ trial. Hell, most of us knew the OJ was suspect at the very least. What people were upset about was this system sucks. It has been skewed. It has been fixed. It has been aimed at one particular group in a manner that is unjust. And now that you are tasting the bitter flavor of injustice, how does it feel, right? That's why Black America was cheering. We're in one of these moments right now. You notice that hyper-conservatives and even some of these like Proud Boys and everything else, right? these people that are anti this and anti that tout themselves as pro-American, proud to be an American. And that kills me when they play that game. So for those of us that are on the sideline, like, you know, I think America's full of it. And that's what you see in a lot of these protests about. To your point, Chuck, this is one of those things where, you know, y'all, all of this stuff you talk about America, this, America, that. Now we get a chance to see just how much you value.
That's exactly right.
Your beloved Constitution. We've heard so much about the founding fathers and the Constitution and, oh, America.
Yeah.
Well, now, are you standing on it? Or you want to try to twist it up and impersonalize it, and that's a word or not. But you see where I'm going. So, I think whether or not America is truly what it says it is.
Yeah.
Is on trial with all of this.
I think both parties, we're a two-party system for right now, are guilty of sticking their finger in the wind and going in that quote-unquote direction versus the principles, I think, of both parties. And one has ignited a supremacist-based and fueled that. It's an old American United States political game that's been there for centuries. The other one is embracing some things that I don't know if all of us Democrats agree with. And so to get along with everybody, we embrace all kind of ideologies and mannerisms and things like that. And the tent might be too big. And neither one of them are standing 10 toes on, quote unquote, their principles. Because sooner or later, we got to get to there's a right and there's a wrong. Sooner or later, we got to say, okay, I know, and I'm on record as saying this, it wasn't a problem with the borders as long as they was coming from across the Atlantic from Europe. But when they come from south of the border, there's an issue. But I believe you do have to protect your borders, and that's not racist. I don't believe to say that. I can agree we need to do something with our borders. However, I don't think that's the boogeyman in the room. I don't think people in Erie, Pennsylvania is really your top priority at WebTech. If somebody that crossed that border took your job and they're running rampant on the streets of Erie and they're out of control. Somehow someone interjected that in your mind. However, at the same time, there's this base on my side where I don't agree that, and this is another topic, it sounds left field, but it's not. I don't believe if you was a man and you're identifying as a woman, you should be playing other women in their sport. I don't agree with that. And I don't think my party should be in that or whatever. I'm a Democrat. And I don't think I should be kicked out of that or ostracized for having that belief. Because I think at many dinner tables, we can respect that preference without going overboard, without saying, like, look, if LeBron James wakes up identifying as a woman, he could go play in the WNBA. I think we got to use some common sense here. That's just where I'm at. And I believe both parties are struggling to find a base and to move on and how they're going to maintain power.
Yeah, that's the. I think there's a couple of things to separate out here. At the top of the agenda right now is the issue of Donald Trump and all of the things that go along with that, having to do with American democracy versus authoritarianism and fascism. But that is, in some ways, a distraction from all of the other stuff that's important. So we were talking about America. Well, what's going on in America? There are a lot of issues. This is one of the issues that Mark just brought up. How are we relating to trans people, LGBTQ people? What are the nuances in that particular, with that particular issue? How are we dealing with the problem that we've never really dealt with? And so when I was thinking about this program, I wrote down all the Trump stuff. And then I said, but there's all these issues that we really need to deal with. How are we dealing with the perpetual American problem of how we relate to one another across racial bounds? We don't have any solutions for the race problem. What we're dealing with now is the same thing they were dealing with at the time of the Civil War. What about dealing with the climate? What about thinking about taking care of, and if you couch this in Christian terms or religious terms, what about taking care of the creation that God granted us, this beautiful, beautiful planet? How are we talking about health care? And do people have a right to health care? And the incredible economic disparity in this country that makes it possible for people to have a health care crisis and then to go bankrupt because they can't afford it because of our health care problems. How are we talking about the rights of women in our society? All of those things in many, many ways are separate from the Trump stuff.
Right.
But Trump...
But are they? But go ahead.
Well, in the long run, they're not, because if we elect a guy like Trump, that affects all of
those
issues.
Every one of those issues that you
exactly
talked about.
Exactly right.
They weaponized.
Yep.
Yeah.
Every
so
single
how
one.
Do we, how, but the Trump, which is why I say to folks on, when I'm talking about these kinds of issues, the first thing is we have to elect leadership in this country that's thoughtful and people of character. And let me just say it boldly, that ain't Donald Trump. He is neither a thoughtful person, nor is he a person of character. Mm-hmm. That guy can't lead us right now.
Yeah. And to add two more things, I mean, what's going on in Colorado, what just happened in Maine with taking him off the ballot, those also shows unto themselves,
yeah.
Right? To go back to the original insurrection that led to the part of the Constitution that Mark was quoting, that needs to be analyzed on a show. Like, all of these are like mini shows. But back to your point on the transgender, because we're talking about, well, what's upcoming for 2024? And, man, it's all of these different topics. And to your point, Chuck, as I said, every single thing you named was weaponized by this candidate,
by
this president.
But it was weaponized by people before him.
Before him.
He just became the fulcrum.
He really has. And when you listen to, you know, these hyper-partisan, I don't even want to call them conservatives because I think that it's a wing within that. I mean, and conservatives need to work that out because their party's been hijacked, right? The people utilize these subjects as pulpit items, right?
Yeah.
They now get on their soapbox. I was listening to something today and they're talking about the border. They're now leaning, you watch the news today, Republicans are leaning into border control. They're talking about shutting the government down. If border control isn't, because they know that base, it's chumming the waters for that base. You know, but on the transgender thing, I know this is a sensitive topic for you, Chuck. Your granddaughter's transgender. We do need to find a balance. But pre-Trump, I used to brag that I was a Republican. You know. This is one of those things where when you listen to both sides, I'm like, damn, I don't think I'm 100% in lockstep with either one of you. We need to find a balance on this subject. The sports part of this drives me crazy the most because I think it is just common sense. I can't argue with you who you identify as or what you identify as. I can make the argument, though, if you are genetically a male, should you be competing against genetic women?
Yeah, and there's complicated levels to that, too, because that's not the topic for today, but that's part of the thing in America, part of the thing for us as part of this society, is thinking about the nuances of things. And so we had a program a few weeks ago where we had Tyler Titus and Susanna Faulkner on the show. And they were sharing things with us that, and I've been part of this sort of milieu for a while now with LGBTQ folks. I'm learning stuff from them as we're talking about it on that show. They have things to teach me. Yeah. And I need to be thoughtful about that. So we have to have conversation about that with one another.
Absolutely.
How do we as a society deal with this particular issue or this particular issue? But you're right. I find that we, and you were sort of saying this too, Mark, that in our parties, we no longer have the ability to do nuance. We go to the extreme right away. Mm-hmm. So if you are in favor of transgender rights, you are all the way to that extreme that we have to just allow it to happen. And we can't talk about situations in which my common sense says maybe there's a reason to be a little more thoughtful about that. So that extreme going from 0 to 60 overnight or in a second makes it really difficult to have conversations about that. That's what I hope that we will be able to do at this table is have those conversations. And the whole issue of LGBTQ, especially how we relate to transgender people,
Absolutely. Is
one of the issues that's on the top of my list.
Yeah, that's a huge 2024 issue because it is growing. It's one of those topics where you can't run and hide from it. We have to come around this subject and say, where do we land as a society? And it's a tough one. On the race conversation, I'm a black man in America. And to some extent, and I say this loosely, I am getting race fatigue. I say that I'm just trying to keep it a thought. I can't watch documentaries anymore that involves this subject. I can't watch movies. When I see the Today's Special, Race in America, click. I can't. Because that the moment that came, rightfully so, you know, the Great Reckoning in 2020 has just been bastardized so badly. Even with Trump talking about, you know, I want to go after these reverse racists for coming after me. He's talking about the black prosecutors that are coming after him, you know, for crimes that they say that he has allegedly committed. And people are chumming the waters. They're applauding. It's no longer dog whistle. They're just calling Fido flat out now. There's no dog whistle, you know. Exactly. But when it comes to the issue of race, it's right now the powers that be, it just feels like the unsolvable. It feels like, and I know that at the end of the day, that is not and cannot be the take. I'm telling you what it feels like for me.
Absolutely, I get that completely.
You know, and
I think in some matters that's purposely done.
I'm sure.
To put a fatigue there, maybe you'll just go away.
Right.
Maybe you'll just give up. It's almost like how we're dealing with the, in my opinion, what's happening with Biden right now. I'm hearing people say, maybe he is too old. Maybe he is responsible for inflation. Maybe he is this and all these other negative things. My issue is, with other people, you look at the numbers. We're in a strange time right now. We're in a time where saying unemployment is low. We're in a time that's saying that inflation is coming down to the point where the Feds is lowering the rates. But yet people, the feeling out there is they've succeeded in making, in my opinion, Biden look like people like, I'm tired of politics. So what happens? Apathy. We don't vote.
Yep. Yep.
And if you're wear right on them, they're you're not right. going to vote.
I have no argument for
I
you.
I saw this with the second term of Obama.
Yep.
What did he really do? Oh, man, he ain't really doing that. They wanted to talk you out of the polls because they don't want you engaged to deal with real issues. And I, myself, I won't let people do that with Biden. I mean, for when I'm around, no. This man's done a lot.
Right.
He faced a lot, and he's done a lot. Mm-hmm. Now, is he perfect? No. But he's better than what I see on the other side.
Well, this is true.
By far.
And that's kind of the fundamental thing for me. Yes, he's old.
Very.
I'm old, and I know how it affects me and how I have issues with memory sometimes and how I will get sleepy at times. Biden's 15 years older than me, so he's old. That's just the reality of the thing. But the other guy is only a couple of years younger, and I would not have that other guy spend any time with my children or grandchildren. Whereas Biden seems like a guy with some character. But if you talk to people on the right, they don't see it that way because we've had now several generations of absolutely demonizing liberals and liberal ideas. Mm-hmm. And so now they're worse than Donald. Yeah, Donald Trump's a bad character, but not as bad as that side because they're trying to take over the world and enforce all of this stuff on us. And that narrative, which because we have married politics and religion in this country to an extreme degree with the evangelicals, that now that's become a spiritual narrative. Now we have a spiritual army out there trying to fight against the devil. And the devil, by the way, is anybody who thinks in a liberal kind of way.
Right.
So I am the devil for many of them. You got to fight the devil, right? Mm-hmm. So it's now become a holy crusade for many people in this country, which is one of the reasons Trump's base is so solid, because they are fighting a religious, a spiritual battle against the principalities and the powers, as the Apostle Paul writes about it. And
poor man that I'm going to remind them of that walks up to women and says, I smack them right in the middle of the wherever.
Yeah.
These ain't my words.
Yeah.
These is his words. Yeah. And this is just the ironic part of this whole thing. A guy where you, if you want to say morals, it's kind of shaky for him. Even if you want to say this guy is to the point where he's telling you about the art of the deals. Let me ask you this. Which deal worked for him in the private sector?
Mark, I've asked that 1,000. The art of the...
He wrote a book on it. He filed bankruptcy. Everything this man has touched financially, with the exception of his name.
Yeah.
He sells a brand. No doubt about that. The Apprentice Show did well. And that's because he didn't have to sell anything, really. However, when he personally ran a school, it collapsed. He personally ran a casino, ladies and gentlemen, it collapsed. He didn't pay his contractors to even build the thing in the first place. Name me the trail of success this guy has had.
Yeah. Evidence don't seem to matter anymore.
Yeah.
Reality doesn't seem to matter.
Alternative facts.
Exactly.
Yeah. The art of faking the deal or the art of swindling the deal, but either way it goes. Another show that will come out of this, that should come out of this, is The Rise and Fall of Rudy Giuliani. That is an entire show unto itself because it begs the question, did Giuliani owe this man some sort of favor covertly from his political years? Because why would you voluntarily crash and burn in such dramatic fashion for anybody after amassing the history and the largesse that he's amassed over the years?
Yeah. Isn't it amazing that this guy who took down the mob in New York has allied himself with a guy who really behaves as a mob king?
Right.
I mean, Trump is a don in every sense of the word. It's why he's Teflon in so many cases. We talked about John Gotti as the Teflon Don. Well, Donnie Trump is a Teflon guy as well because he operates in this manner that belittles and bullies and intimidates and manipulates people. And so people will be runaway scared. Yeah. He plays the game as John Gotti or Sam Giancana or Al Capone did. Capone, who happens to be one of his heroes. So those are things that we just aren't paying attention to.
Yeah. I mean, you got Giuliani has lost his defamation case right against the two African-American women from Georgia. Yeah. And now he's filing bankruptcy. You know, Marjorie Deal Greene, she cut a deal from the very beginning after all of that rhetoric and all of that big talk. And so those are trials unto it, or shows unto itself, the what's coming out of Detroit right now about the election and trying to get these the electors or what have, and offering them legal assistance. And it's just so much coming out of this. Another thing I think going forward in 2024 that is a show is regulating AI. Mm. People are starting to wrestle with that. Mm-hmm. It needs to be wrestled with. You talk about fatigue, Margaret. Social media, if you send me a message on Facebook Messenger, you better send me a text message first telling me it's really you. Or I'm not
going to. I know.
Or I'm not going to answer it.
Yes.
Everything is a bot. Every phone call, every other text messages, every message on Facebook for certain, or one of these other social media sites. AI is just scary. Some of these deep fake videos that I've seen, I'm staring at this thing like, damn, if I didn't know any better,
absolutely,
I'm really thinking this person is saying and doing this thing, which leads to the, as crazy as this sounds, what is truth?
Yeah, you do sound crazy sometimes.
Yeah.
But that's because it's a crazy world. I mean, just life makes us crazy.
Yeah.
You remember when the internet came along, there was this sort of sensibility that said, now people are going to have access to all the information that they need, and that's gonna make us smarter and more thoughtful. And here we are sitting, and we're thinking, not so much. Hasn't happened. In fact, in many ways, the opposite has happened, and there's a lot of reasons for that. Maybe that's a conversation part of the AI thing, but that leads me to the same suspicions with AI. What are the unforeseen consequences of this that we're not even thinking about? Because if you give somebody a tool, they're going to use it. But they can use it for a lot of different things.
Yeah.
You give me a hammer, I can build my house. I can also hit you in the head.
Right.
So what are we, how do we use these tools? It goes back to the fundamental question for me, which is, you know, why are we the way we are, human beings? And how, what is at root, what leads us to function and to think and to behave the way that we do? If we don't talk about what's there, then we're doomed to continue to repeat the same problems. It's why we're still dealing with the race issue, because we haven't dealt with the human heart. And I know how complicated that is, and I know how idealistic that sounds, but I think that's a big part of the conversation. How do we change people's, not just their minds about a particular policy, but how do we change people on more fundamental levels? It's why I'm so frustrated about religious institutions in this country, because we've become, or maybe we always were, about protecting our own turf and our own ideas and our own identities, as opposed to doing what I think it's all about, which is creating. When Jesus talks about the kingdom of God, I think he's talking about building the better world that somewhere inside us we know can exist. That's what Jesus is saying. You want to live in that world where people respect and love one another, then this is what that kingdom looks like, and how
with,
you get
with
there.
With all of these huge issues on the horizon that we see them coming to a head on 2024 and beyond, is religion even playing, will it even have an impact on these subjects?
Well, on the negative side, yes. So you have people like Mike Johnson, the new Speaker of the House, who is vocally and passionately an evangelical Christian.
That's a good point.
7 years ago, he said, when Trump ran the first time, he said, this man is dangerous. He doesn't have the character to lead. Now he's on board. And so what does that tell me about religion? All through the South, and not just in the South anymore, but all around America and even evangelical churches, they have decided that the idea that there's a separation between church and state is not real. That's not the way it was intended to be. The founders wanted us to be a Christian nation, and so they're just saying, let them come and get me. Let them revoke my tax-exempt status if need be. But I'm saying from the pulpit that Donald Trump is God's Messiah. That's happening all over the place, especially in big mega churches and with the folks who get media publicity. So if that's happening, yes, religion is going to have an impact on this. And I'm saying to my friends and in the peers in the church, it's time. We need to stand up and say, this is not what Jesus taught. This is not the world that Moses and the prophets in the Old Testament encouraged us to build. This is not what the Buddha teaches. You can't go to a religion and find it teaching about who we should hate, who we should ostracize, who we should suppress. It's not about any of that.
Yeah.
So religion has completely, completely lost its moorings, and we need to reattach it to those moorings.
That's too bad, because we need it now more than ever.
We really do.
Well, I had seen something by Jeremiah Wright, and it was a bishop in L.A., Past Bishop Jones, I believe his name was, and they was talking about the rise of the evangelical Pentecostal and how the earlier days of the church, they dealt with life on earth, how to navigate through that. But when the evangelical came in, the rise of, and not villainizing, just saying what it was, how they left the seminary. You wasn't seminary trained no more. You didn't have to be theologically trained. You got a calling from God. So now the word, because it's funny how Chuck said the internet. When you deal with the internet and the history of the internet, it was content. Simply, the internet existed before we got to it. And all it was military and colleges that had information on there. But then later on, when we got access to it, that wasn't enough. It became interpretation and entertainment got involved. And now people are taking entertainment and interpretation as true information. And so this is what happens almost scripturally. You lost the meaning of the original words. Someone comes and he gets called. This is what I feel it meant. And he preaches that. Because now the goal is not necessarily living here daily as preparation for heaven, not here, not dealing with this right here. We're going to excuse this. We're dealing with something different here. And they're not necessarily trained, but their congregation don't want to hear nothing like that. That's my minister that we're talking about here. That's my, of course he knows, Mark, it came from God. But even where we see a Jesus comes in when he's asked about divorce, up until Jesus' time, they said, well, who was she married to? And Moses had the law that came down, and Jesus said, that didn't even come from God. That came from Moses, just to deal with the daily situations. Mm-hmm. However, when he said it, up until that point, and probably past that point with many people at that time, actually, that was the law, and that came from God.
Mm-hmm.
So that transition, when we say like religion, is it fading or the impact that it have? Even if we deal with religion here in the States, we have to understand that Israeli-Palestinian thing is clearly religion.
Yeah.
We back it because it's our faith. Basically, I mean, like, what is our connection with Israel outside of that faith?
Right, right. I agree with that.
Yeah. You don't mess with Israel if you're talking about the base that Trump has, because they believe Israel is part of God's plan for the end of the world and for the coming of the kingdom of God and the second coming of Christ. So you mess with Israel, if you speak negatively of Israel, mm-hmm. Now you're getting in God's way. And so a politician, boy, that puts him in a bad spot. So Israel can go out there and commit genocide, and we can't say nothing about it because we'll alienate this base, and that base is big and powerful, and they are immune to facts.
But along those lines, and we've already spoken about it once, but obviously we need a continuation of that discussion. You look at the young people in this country, they are not on that page. They're like, there's a lot of pro-Palestinian rallies. And even when you look at the Republicans on this America First stuff, trying to please that MAGA base, funding and supporting you. I've never seen this many conservatives like, I don't know if we're trying to give this money to Israel. Whoever heard of that? Mark, like you said, that stance that America's had, it's been the Republicans who have dug their heels in deepest on that position. And they're even saying, I don't know if we want to keep funding this. You know, it's a different day and time. I must admit, let me announce this now because you'll hear this going forward for 2024, and I want you all to be on the same page. When I would start referring to the former president as Ron Rump instead of Don Trump. And I'll tell you why. Ron, because the famous Ron Jeremy used to F people for a living. He kind of does that.
He does.
Rump, because he makes a jackass out of himself every time he opens his mouth. And so when I mention Ron Rump going forward, you'll know who I'm talking about.
You're pushing the boundaries there, brother.
You know who I'm talking about. But the Israeli conflict, that's going to be a story for this year, continually adding to that. But back to that AI thing, what is truth? I mean, I don't say that in jest. We're really out of time. We're analyzing, trying to discern what's real and what isn't, what's truth and what isn't.
Yeah. Yeah, so I think two things about that. One is that there's so much going on in the world that was not going on when you and I were kids. Life was really, truly simpler in most ways. I didn't have to deal with the internet. I didn't have to deal with the fact that there are the 24/7 news cycle. I didn't have to deal with the fact that I now am aware of people who have different kinds of faiths than I have because they were hidden for so long. I didn't have to deal with 9 billion people on the planet. When I was a kid, there were 3. The world has changed so much. AI, are you kidding me? And so you talked about the exhaustion on the race issue. I think people are exhausted of everything. Everything is being questioned today. The foundations that we built our lives on are shaking. So that's the downside. People are exhausted and confused. The upside is that it gives us a chance to think about things in ways that we haven't had much of an opportunity to do. Crisis does that. Yeah. So here we are at some crises moments, and now we have to think. Somebody said this. I don't know where this came from, but some quote that I wrote down a while back. You can live one of two ways. You can live according to circumstances, or you can live according to vision. And this person who said this was writing about the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence, and he said, what has happened to those values that were embedded in the Constitution? Which, by the way, I think religious people can support. The pursuit of life, the pursuit of liberty, the pursuit of happiness. Why are those things not at the heart of what we're trying to make happen in our world today? I want to ask Trump people, what's his vision for the future of America? And I don't know that, and I'm not sure that many of the people that I will talk to that I tend to agree with can articulate that either, but I think that's at the heart of it. What is our vision for this world going forward? I don't want to be at the whim of every new circumstance, every new technology that comes along. I want to be centered on something that is important, fundamental.
Now you talk about pushing the boundary with the Ron Rump comment. He has been genuinely pushing the boundaries with his rhetoric lately. The pulling on Hitler's rhetoric is intentional, I believe. And, you know, referring to, talking about the borders, referring to people as vermin. Then you think about it. We're in a building right now that's been renovated, right? You go in a building and it has vermin. Who do you call? An exterminator. I mean, you think about the literal nature of such language, and when Hitler used it in a literal sense, he's using that term because in Hitler, he's like, they need to be exterminated. And he moved that direction when you hear him talking about them poisoning the blood of our country. So it is now, and what's, you can't convince me that he doesn't know what he's doing. But when you've had so many people not just drink the Kool-Aid, come back for seconds, I would think, yeah, let me see how far I can take this.
Sure.
You know, so.
Especially when you're in court.
Right.
And you could be going to jail. So you're going to ramp it up as much as
there
you can.
There it is. There it is. And if this is a real threat, and it is, mm-hmm. He tried it once on January 16th. I need soldiers.
Yeah.
I need people that are going to act.
Yep.
And he chummed the waters and they acted. And I know he was sitting back there like, yes.
And I think the big hidden fear, the elephant in the room is, if it does go the route that you just said, are we headed? And unfortunately, you had an individual go into Colorado recently with a semi-automatic weapon because he felt that someone was going after Trump. And so we almost have the fumes of a civil war. And I believe there is a small group of population that wants that, that really wants it to be decided in those views. And to your point, Marcus, one of the things that I think helped people like Trump is the promotion of ignorance. And I've noticed like there's a movement to attack education systems. You call in colleges where used to be elite places of learning and understanding and how to be analytical and not telling you how to think or what to think, but just telling you to think. They've been demonized as liberal now because they can be objective. So you kill that. And then now anything that sounds like global warming sounds like science. No, God got that. That's not global warming. That's whatever. And you villainize it. You're speaking on history. Imagine this. Someone said they move into the free state of Florida. Now, free state of Florida where they're banning books.
Yes.
What's free about banning books?
Yeah, and you can't talk about race in the schools there.
You can't say anything.
Yeah, how is that?
So how is that representative of our country's so-called beliefs or foundation? So that is something that I think that we have to address. But as far as AI, I fear as long as corporations are involved, we're facing a losing battle right there because everybody at this table, except for our program person, we have our cell phones right by us. Mm-hmm. We're a victim right now. It's listening to what we're saying. It's putting together. Oh, and he has his.
John has his too.
And yeah, it's programming. Yeah. It's programming. It's reacting to everything we're saying.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And our reels will affect it. And it will affect our moods unless we can get out of this matrix. And yeah, everybody doesn't take a red or green pill.
You're making the point, Mark, because absolutely, with all of these things tying together, Civil War. Yeah. I'm under the impression, I'm of the mindset that we've been actively involved in a digital civil war for a couple years now.
Oh, yeah.
Right? It goes back to the algorithms that you're talking about. Right? You are this racist, be it overt or covert, rhetoric that is attracting you on social media. You clicked on it, you stayed on X amount of seconds. Okay, feed that to them again. The algorithm just kind of takes over from there, and you now are on a steady diet of yeah, 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 until you get worked into a frenzy, right? The friend and unfriend, I've never seen a pattern of unfriending as feverish as it is right now. And people are arguing about it in public. Why are you mad at so-and-so? Hey, you unfriended me because I posted such. Adults, not
yeah,
kids.
Yeah.
So I think we've been in a digital civil war for a minute. My fear is that, and it has started with some of the examples, one of the examples you just named, it's starting to spill over into reality.
Yeah, it is.
And that makes me nervous. I'm at the range more than I've ever been.
Let me ask you two questions. If project this for yourself, what if Donald Trump goes to jail? Let's say it happens sometime this summer. What's going to be the cultural response to that? What's going to happen in America? I think what's going to be happening is he's going to stir it even more. I mean, they can't shut him up even from jail. He's going to foment revolution, civil war. And that's one scenario. What if he wins in November?
Same thing.
Same damn thing, because he's going to go after people.
Yeah.
So I'm only going to be a dictator for one day. But on that day, I'm going to kill a few million people. Yeah. That's clearly his goal. Get revenge. Take out those people who have disagreed with me or spoken ill of me. Or I think violence, I don't know how we avoid it at this point.
No.
That's my fear.
He has said outright, I will be your retribution.
Yeah.
He has said that outright. I mean, it goes back to the point of he is dog whistle. Isn't even an issue anymore. I mean, we're now at a place where people are speaking very, very plainly.
They are. And that.
And yeah, the sad point and the true point about, in my opinion, of Donald Trump is I don't think anybody really knows who he is. I don't even think he knows who he is, because although he does these things, and I always take this position, I take hits for it. While Trump is doing the dog whistle thing, he's also the person that gave the largest check ever
to HBCUs.
To HBCUs.
Yep.
He just wants to be in control of it.
Yeah.
He don't want to be viewed as a racist, yeah, but he wants to define what it is and what it isn't.
Yep.
And so he wants to be all things to everybody, but under his control. And he wants to control that. But how he views himself is totally different, I believe, than what we view him. And I think that's a very dangerous thing when how we approach. He's almost built up shields where we have to be cautious about how we attack him to defeat him. Hillary dismissed him, which I think that's why she lost. She didn't believe that he could touch people in the voting the way that they voted. She didn't believe she could lose. He connected with Middle Pennsylvania, and I don't necessarily believe he touched with those folks based off of just race. He touched on many topics that maybe we need to address. But if we come at it the way that he comes at it, we lose. That's our challenge.
Well, Mark, let me ask you this. What do you see on the horizon? What do you think some of the top stories by way of race will be in 2024?
I think reparations will be villainized, because that's on the thing right now with New York. New York now has passed something that is going to analyze
another
reparations,
show.
And that's going to be weaponized and say, see, my granddad didn't have nothing to do with that, and why should blah blah? Why should my tax money go to this? So we're gonna have to deal with that. And again, I think people want that type of fatigue and those type of issues to cloud it. So again, corporate America, which is behind the scenes of both, they're cutting the checks to both parties.
Yeah,
And so they're okay in this chaos, because long as this chaos, we can accept somebody that has billions and billions of dollars that could decide whether a town survives, whether a town doesn't, whether you could control the amount of food that we grow, all these type of decisions. They're controlling our Congress. And we can't get to them. We can't get to election campaign finance reform. We can't get to the things that can improve our democracy, because we got to decide what we're going to do with Social Security. These bills, the real things are coming due. That we can't keep borrowing money. Every cycle, it seems like Congress is getting ready to say, well, we're going bankrupt, and we got to pass this right here. And every time they seem to do it, even you said the conservatives say, hold up, we going at a rate. Trump spent, they even said it, Trump spent how they got these Democrats supposedly spent. You couldn't tell the difference in his budget. Sooner or later, these bills will become due. We have to decide, is it okay to spend billions without thought to Ukraine and Israel and yet or Palestine and say there's no money for Flint water?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
There's no money for that. There's no money for our schools here.
That's a massively complex discussion, because it involves what do Americans think about taxes? What do Americans, and one of the things we're pretty sure of is that Trump wants to continue reducing taxes on the richest Americans, which means you and I are going to pay the bills.
Definitely.
And so the stratification of American society becomes worse and worse and worse, which is, historically speaking, a recipe for revolution. Mm-hmm. It's what leads to people just being fed up and marching on the Capitol building or whatever. And I think all of these issues need thoughtful, intelligent, respectful discussion. But we don't do that anymore in America. So
it's
that's
soundbites.
We're doomed.
It is.
I'm talking myself into feeling like we're doomed. I need to stop talking so I can feel better.
Are we witnessing the fall of America? We did that show several shows ago, and I was the naysayer. I'm telling you, man, I am not optimistic.
You're a bad influence on me.
When was the last time you noticed we're coming at a time where, okay, suspicion of the government is always there, and they say Thomas Jefferson or Paine always says suspect the government or don't necessarily trust it, but you could believe in it. The military was questioning the COVID vaccine. Now, prior to that, those enlisted men or whatever, they didn't know what was getting injected into their arms. Anybody that's ever been in boot camp knows you get the vaccines. You get whatever vaccine, no question whatsoever. No conspiracy about what they was putting in their arm, whether it was a chip, all these type of things. Now it's been politicized. A vaccine, science now. It's being politicized. Everything is a conspiracy. So when we get to this, like we're arguing about, people said, hey, that vaccine had a chip in it and it's tracking us. The same people carrying iPhones.
That has a chip in it that's tracking you.
Yeah, and probably right. Is listening to them. So.
And the minute you open social media, it'll be an advertisement on there. Need to buy a new chip? Because it heard you talking about
yeah,
it.
Yeah.
There we go.
It's crazy.
But we don't like the Chinese. Who makes iPhone?
Listen, I'm going there next. When you're talking about the bills coming due, if you look at who buys and who owns the vast majority of America's debt, by no coincidence, it is China. Who is everybody complaining about for being in the process of purchasing U.S. steel? China, right? We go to New York every year. We have an event there, and that event is usually held at the Waldorf Astoria. Why is it not at the Waldorf Astoria right now? Because it's being renovated by the Chinese because they bought it. And the list goes on. And so if the bills are coming due, and the person who holds the largest stake in your debt, it's supposedly the country that you're having these standoffs with. How's that not problematic? Enter Ron Rump again. He was the guy that wanted to be tough on China. That conversation does need to be had. So whether it's that, the HBCU thing, there are things in his record, because at the end of the day, he's just trying to curry favor. The massive spending, the him turning the bank upside down during COVID, he was trying to buy votes. He could care less about the U.S. Treasury. He had access to give people money. He gave them more money to stay at home. This is the same party who preaches lift yourself up by the bootstraps. I can't tell an unprecedented number. You paid people way more money to stay at home than ever in human history.
And he said he would have paid more.
Yes.
He said that. He would have paid more. See, that's my problem with his followers. It would be like, I had a group of people at work. They said, when Trump get in, he said, we're going to drill, baby, drill. And they was all excited. I said, do you know who the number one producer of oil right now is? How much more can you drill? They said, who? I said, we are. So what does drilling have to do with this whole thing? But you listen, you buying the Kool-Aid, man. This is Jim Jones times a million.
Yeah, it is.
They buying the Kool-Aid, anything this guy does or say, but it touches their primitive, I don't know, but it touches the WWE in them, and it hits them, and they just go with it.
You WWE fan?
I am not a WWE fan.
You, Mark?
I used to be.
Yeah. Okay, you grew up when you were like 8. When I was a kid, I grew up in Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh was a hotbed. Bruno Sammartino and Jumpin' Johnny DeFazio. I loved studio wrestling. A friend of mine's dad was the commentator for studio wrestling. I was into it. And then I turned 13. And I thought, oh, that's just... And my cousin said to me, you know, they're all part of the Actors Union.
What?
Hey. But and so it, I realized it was, you know, in my more mature stages that, but I think many of us have that mentality about so many things. Yeah. This is the point in the show, by the way, and it happens almost every show, where my head starts to explode.
Yeah.
Because it's just so much.
I can see it. I see the steam coming off it right now.
That's why we need to do individual programs on these. On these really big
anybody
issues.
With intelligence, I would think, would be disappointed or overwhelmed by what we would perceive the stupidity that's going on across the or the ignorance that's going on across the board with, I guess, no solution in sight. You know, we all fight our private battles, but
yeah,
I'm disheartened in some of the things that I've seen.
Yeah. There's a great quote from I don't know if I used this here before or not, but a theologian named Dietrich Bonhoeffer, who was a priest pastor in Germany in the run-up to World War II, and he was a vehement critic of the Nazis, ended up being killed by them. But from jail, he wrote a lot of deeply meaningful theological works. One of the things he said in that was, stupid is much more dangerous than malevolence. And isn't that a fascinating thing from this guy who was a thoughtful, respected pastor in Germany? He just looked around and said, they're all behaving stupidly. And the danger is that they're following the malevolence. And so stupid is more dangerous. And I see a lot of that today. And I don't want to say to people they're stupid. I like the word ignorance better, the things they don't know. But I think that's where the danger comes from. People don't know and don't want to know. And that's an even bigger problem.
Hey, but you know, the algorithm, again, the rise of hyper-partisan networks, people can be, if it's a such, informed stupid, right? Yeah. I am stupid because I don't want to hear the other side of any given argument. But boy, I'm informed on this one thing that I'm digging my heels in on because somebody's giving me a steady diet of that thing. And I'm finding 15 ways to justify that thing. And it is a scary time. And that just it goes back to this AI thing and regulating AI thing. And even if you regulate AI, you still have this issue of disseminating quote-unquote truth and things disguised as truth. But what's fascinating about the AI thing, looking at a documentary on the fear, kind of these movies and television shows becoming real, the fear of AI charting its own pathway forward and starting to outsmart its programmers, starting to outsmart mankind that has built it in the first place. And one of the things that it pointed to was how AI learns for us as experiential learning. You've gone through the experience, oh, I've learned. And it is the hyper-shared information, that information is shared at light speed, and it made me think about The Matrix. I need to learn how to fly a plane.
Battlestar Galactica.
There. And you access the program, and I now know how to fly a plane. Let's go. I need to be a black belt in karate right now. Upload the program. And all of these computers, and was talking about that, and this is the thing that mankind can't keep up with. As it shares information, its knowledge and database grows, and it's like the minute the one program shares information with the other, it's learned automatically. And it starts to outrun and outdistance. And that is so fascinating. But I think it's that thing of movies, because you know I'm a big movie buff.
Yeah.
The things that we've been watching, like, okay, this is no longer just entertainment.
Yeah, it's not science fiction anymore.
It's not science fiction anymore. I think we've watched the end several times and didn't know it.
If we're going to be a culture that elects people like Donald Trump, maybe we should be ruled by AI.
I think ultimately we
maybe
will be.
Maybe that's what we deserve.
Yeah. Ultimately, we will be.
Man, so I really look forward to talking about all of these kinds of issues. And one of the things that I wrestle with in the spheres where I'm doing some other kinds of work, we're asking ourselves the question, how do you talk about these kinds of issues in ways that allow you to get a genuine hearing from people who think differently from you? And so here you and I are, you know, the three of us sit around this table on a regular basis. We have conversations and we disagree about some things, but generally speaking, we're kind of on the same page. So it's easy for us to have these conversations. Yeah. How do we get people who aren't in our particular echo chamber to think about these things in ways that allow us to reason together, to come to answers that are good for the masses? That's not an easy question to answer. How do we do that? And I'm still polarizing in the way that I do it. I still want to argue with you and win the argument sometimes, but I'm working on it. And I think we need to work on that as a society.
And I'm going to offer a little ray of hope here, because it does seem overwhelming. I'm going to send a shout out to one of my mentors, Fred Rush. He used to always teach me. He said, all politics is local. Maybe, as Booker T says, cast your bucket here. Cast it right here. Let's deal with our neighborhoods first. And go with the micro. Don't deal with the macro. The macro, I'm not saying ignore the macro. That's not what I'm saying. I want that clear. But if you deal with each individual, would deal with the micro, we could get to the macro. And it's not so overwhelming. Because everything starts with what? The first step. Not the finish, but the first step. And we can't get paralyzed by the finish. We have to take the first step. And this is what we're doing. I guess we're doing our part right here. But there is the hope, and it just doesn't lie within this table. I see hope where the potential, I'm not saying the final things with Black Lives Matter. Black Lives Matter didn't come out of the quote-unquote established. It came out of necessity. As the younger generation said, well, this one is not doing that. We're going to create this. The potential was there. Yeah. I don't necessarily like where it is now, but I say the potential was there.
Yeah.
And I always think something's always going to offer us hope. It may not come from within us, but it'll be somewhere else. And I do think that it is bad, but not as bad as we think.
That takes us to another show.
Planes landing.
Takes us to another show, Mark, because 100% to your point, there's a reason why this candidate has been in Erie so many times. So the local is going to be impacted big time on this very same conversation. Pennsylvania is going to be at the heart of this election. And he's going to be here on multiple occasions. Right. And I want to say this while I have my intern, John, here. One of the things that I really look forward to doing is going to a couple of these rallies, choice rallies, probably taking security with me, and setting up a folding table. And I kid you not, taking my microphones. And I just want people, listen, I don't want to give pushback. I don't want to debate you. I want to unpack on the air why you are so heavily invested in this candidate. I want to know.
Yeah, I do too.
I want to know. And that's one of these subjects where at this election year, you will hear us do more of that. I want to take it to the streets and say, and the person said, I want to have my, grab the other mic, because I want to hear this. I want us to be educated on this, because it's not as simple as we think. We feel a certain way. It's not as simple as we think. And to something we said earlier, Mark, when you start undressing a lot of things and really dissecting this man's record, there's some things there that people are going to hang their hat on, like, I'm not mad at that. I see where you land on that at, you know? So I really want to learn, because we're at a point of no return, and we have to really start analyzing some of the staunch supporters and saying, listen, educate me. Yeah. I don't want to argue with you, but I do want to ask follow-up questions, and my opinion is not even a part of this conversation. Yeah. Educate us. Because this, it's growing.
Yeah.
When he said I could shoot somebody in the middle of Fifth Avenue or not, the dude has everything under the sun being thrown at him, and his numbers grow.
Yeah.
There's something to this.
Yep.
Ladies and gentlemen, that's it for our show today. If you are somewhat depressed, do not feel alone. But as we look at 2024, there are some large conversations looming on the horizon that are really going to affect who we are as a nation for years to come. And we're looking forward to talking about it, whether it's emailing or inboxing. If you have opinions, by all means, put it out there, because we want to have some very meaningful, robust discussions this year. But for right now, we want you to tune in next time for more of these discussions and more analysis, whether it's about local or national topics with local and national guests. Remember that Next 2.0 streams on Fridays on all major podcast platforms. And let me say this. If you're enjoying it, and I'm finding that more and more people are, I'm having more people ask me about this show that have never asked me about the show in the past. If you're enjoying it, email somebody a segment that you enjoy. Text somebody a segment that you enjoy. Talk about it on your page. Talk about it over to the dinner table. Spread the word if you've enjoyed what you've heard. But on Fridays, it streams on all major podcast platforms. On the fourth Sunday of the month, it airs at 4 p.m. on WQLN NPR at 91.3 FM. So you can catch it there. So for Next 2.0, I'm Marcus Atkinson with my guest hosts, Mark Blunt and Chuck Camerata. Great to start the year with you guys. It's been fun. It's going to be more fun in the near future. And join us again so that you can hear about what's next for our communities and our democracy. I am Marcus Atkinson. See you next time. Peace.